From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, the withdrawal nomination of Michigan Attorney Michael Bogren for the federal bench is sending a strong message about crossing the line from advocating for a client to attacking people of faith. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, who put a spotlight on Bogren's dangerous attack on a Catholic couple in Michigan, comparing their beliefs about marriage to the KKK, joins me in just a moment. He'll also weigh in on the most recent insider leak from the tech world on their continuing bias against conservatives. And the Trump administration leaving no doubt where they stand on one of the massive appropriations bills the House Democrats are advancing as we speak, which would torpedo most of the administration's pro-life initiatives and policies. CNS News Editor-in-Chief Terry Jeffrey has details on that and the ballooning deficit. Now, listen up, parents. Here's one you need to pay close attention to. At their annual meeting this week in Chicago, the American Medical Association furthered the assault on parental rights, voting to encourage state laws that strip parents of their medical guardianship of their minor children. We'll talk about the details of this egregious attack, which, left unchallenged, will only invite more, with Dr. David Stevens, president of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. All of that and more on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Before we jump into the first topic, I just want to remind you, this week, focusing on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. In the House, we're trying to advance this 50 times. Republicans have gone to the floor asking for a vote on this bill that would ensure America does not go down the path of infanticide. And 50 times they've been denied. So, to counter this, House Minority Whip Steve Scalise and Congresswoman Ann Wagner have filed a discharge petition on the Born Alive Act. Now, if 218 members of the House signed this discharge petition, it would force Speaker Pelosi and House Democrats to bring it to the floor for a vote. Now, here's the good news. 201 members have signed it. Only 17 more signatures are needed to force a vote on this bill that would keep America from going down this path of infanticide. We need your help. We need you to contact your member of Congress. If you don't know where they stand on this, you can go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over. We've got a link there to Steve Scalise's site. He's tracking each one of these members. And you can help us send a message to Nancy Pelosi by sending one of these newborn baby hats to Nancy Pelosi. We're going to send 90,000. We've acquired about 47,000. When we get to 90, we're going to take those to Capitol Hill. You can be a part of this campaign, the End Birthday Abortion Campaign. We've got folks this week standing by to take your phone call. They'll take your call today, 800-225-4008. Every $9 you give, we'll send another newborn baby hat to Nancy Pelosi's office. Again, that number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com and simply click on the End Birthday Abortion Campaign banner. All right, first, Michael Bogren, a Trump judicial nominee, coming from Michigan, a blue state with two Democratic senators, is withdrawing from consideration amid a Republican backlash, led in part by my first guest, Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. And I'm also going to get him to weigh in on some new information coming out of the tech world that shows more conservative bias. Senator Hawley serves on the Judiciary Committee. He is also on the Armed Services Committee, as well as the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I want to set the stage for those that may not have heard our earlier interview when we were talking about this case of Michael Bogren, who appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee. I want to play a very short clip of you asking him about what is at issue here, and that is the religious hostility he shows toward this couple crossing the line, comparing their beliefs to the Ku Klux Klan. Let's play that clip.
You think that the Catholic family's pointing to the teachings of their church is equivalent to a KKK member invoking Christianity?
From a legal perspective.
You can just give me a yes or no answer
on
that.
From a legal perspective, Senator.
Can you say no?
There is no distinction.
Oh, so, okay. So the answer is yes.
In all fairness, Senator, you gave him an opportunity to walk that back, which I believe he crossed the line with that comparison. And I believe that is why his nomination is being withdrawn.
Yeah, you know, I repeatedly gave him the opportunity to say he'd made a mistake, to say that that comparison was out of line. And it wasn't just that comment, Tony, as you know. I mean, he made these statements throughout the litigation. He made them to the press. He attacked this poor Catholic family personally, drug their names through the mud. He said that they were trying to dress up their arguments and that, I'm quoting him now, shimmering robes of righteousness. That's what he said about their faith. I mean, you talk about just nasty personal attacks. He went on to say that they only actually followed their faith, though selectively, so saying that they weren't really sincere in their beliefs, and he attacked them to the press. I mean, it was really a very bad performance. I mean, it's exactly the sort of thing that the U.S. Supreme Court has said government officials should not do. They should not denigrate people of faith. They should not use comments that display anti-religious animus and anti-religious hatred. And that's what he did. And this is the right outcome. I mean, this is somebody who can't see that this is wrong, who can't see that this takes away or at least threatens the First Amendment rights of all of us, shouldn't be on the bench.
Senator, I certainly understand those who say that an attorney should aggressively argue for his client. I get that. I understand that. But I believe you crossed the line when you began, as you say, to denigrate people of faith and then use analogies or comparisons that the left would use. I mean, it looks like he pulled a page out of the SPLC playbook and call in comparing their beliefs about marriage to the Ku Klux Klan.
No, that's exactly what he did. I mean, these were inflammatory remarks, and they were meant to be inflammatory because he made them over and over and over again. It wasn't like he just accidentally stumbled into an analogy that he later said, oh, oops, I shouldn't have done that. And he knew that this was inflammatory. That's why he made them to the press. That's why he repeated this throughout the litigation. That's why he made these comments in court. He knew what he was doing, and I gave him the chance to say, you know what, I shouldn't have done that. But he didn't. He wouldn't. He stood by the remarks. And, you know, Tony, I see that this afternoon he's actually released a statement now standing by his representation and saying that he was using reasonably available means permitted by the law. I'm quoting from his letter that he's just released. If you think comparing a Catholic family to the KKK and to radical Islamic imams who want to take away rights from women, if you think that that's reasonable, then you're making the case. You shouldn't be on the bench. And it's a good thing he's not.
So what is the message that this sends to other attorneys out there who may be representing clients that might be inclined to go down the path that the left has been enticing the legal world to go down, and that is attacking people of faith?
I think the message is follow the United States Supreme Court and the First Amendment. The United States Supreme Court said in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case that government officials should not denigrate religious believers by comparing their views to racists and to supporters of the Holocaust and supporters of slavery. I mean, Justice Kennedy wrote that opinion. He specifically singled out rhetoric like what Mr. Bogren used and said this kind of rhetoric has no place in governmental decision making. So, you know, attorneys should take that to heart, and they should. You can vigorously defend your clients. I've had a lot of clients. I vigorously defend them. You can do that without stooping to personal insults and vicious anti-faith attacks against your opponents. And that kind of thing should be out of bounds in the public square.
Now, you've taken some heat from conservative corners for your questioning and opposition to candidates such as Bogren. He's not the first that you've challenged, first you've opposed. What do you say to your critics?
Well, I'm just doing my job. I mean, look, I was elected and sent to the United States Senate by the people of Missouri to represent our values and to represent our way of life. And I've taken the same commitments that the President of the United States has taken to vote for people. In the President's case, it's to nominate people. In my case, it's to vote for judicial nominees who are in favor of the Constitution, including the First Amendment, who respect the sanctity of life, and who are going to stand by our shared values. And so I take that very seriously. I'm going to hold every nominee to these tests. I'm going to ask if they believe in the Constitution, if they believe in the rule of law, if they'll respect the will of the people as expressed in the law and the Constitution. And I'm going to do that regardless of who they are.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, my guest. You know, I would say this, Senator. First off, I commend you for standing firm when others, began taking shots at you. But you remind me, for those, for my older listeners, they'll understand the comparison to Jesse Helms, who, when he was in the Senate, was one of the few Republican voices that would speak up against Republican nominees who were bad. And he was oftentimes the only one. But then other times he rallied the Republicans to oppose bad nominees.
You know, what I think of is, look at the example that President Trump has set, who has shaken things up, to put it mildly, because he hasn't been willing to go along with the same old establishment talk and the same old establishment ways of doing things. You know, he was the one who very boldly as a candidate said, you know what, I'm going to nominate judges who respect religious liberty. I'm going to nominate judges who respect the sanctity of life. He said that boldly, and at the time, a lot of people said, oh my gosh, you can't say that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. he did. He was courageous about it. I think voters want straight shooters who are going to defend our rights. And all I ask of judges is, I don't want them imposing their views, whatever their views are. I don't want them doing that. I want them following the Constitution as it's written and following the laws.
I think you are absolutely right. I think the American people today, given what has taken place in our courts and elsewhere, are simply wanting leaders who will say what they mean and mean what they say and be willing to fight for those things. And that's why I think Donald Trump enjoys continued support among conservatives. He's fought for the things that he articulated on the campaign trail that people weren't quite sure about because he didn't have a record. But they are firmly in his corner as he continues to fight for these things. Speaking of records, I want to transition to another issue very quickly before we run out of time. As you were Attorney General in Missouri, you delved into the big tech world. More information coming out of the conservative, anti-conservative bias, Pinterest, labeling pro-life groups and other conservative groups as pornographic sites to block them. It would appear to me that the big tech industry is not doing this unintentionally, but rather intentionally, given all the focus that Republicans have put on this issue in Washington.
You know, we just time and time again, case after case, Tony, we're hearing this evidence, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Pinterest, whether it's YouTube, Facebook, of course. We see evidence of conservative voices, and might I say especially actually pro-life voices, and Christian voices being discriminated against, being silenced, being deplatformed, I guess they call it. And that's a problem. I mean, it's a problem when these – and here's why it's a problem. These companies are not treated like other publishing companies or media companies. The government has given them special status. They've given them special favors by exempting them from liability. So, you know, if you think that you have been improperly discriminated against, you can't go sue Twitter. There's a federal law that specially exempts them from that liability. So my view is that if these companies are going to take advantage of this special treatment that government gives to them and to nobody else, then they need to abide by the terms of that and not discriminate on the basis of viewpoint, not discriminate on the basis of belief or political persuasion.
Sounds fair to me. Maybe it's time to change the law if they don't want to play fair.
Well, I think that, you know, they're not going to leave us a lot of choice. I mean, if they're not going to abide by the terms of the law, and if they're going to just use these special treatments that government's given them in order to get rich, in order to get powerful, and then to impose their own political views, we're going to have a big problem.
All right, Senator, thanks so much. Got to go. Folks, don't go away. We're back after this.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more. If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org. Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you want to join the in-birthday abortion campaign, we've got folks standing by to take your phone call. Send a message to Nancy Pelosi. Send her a baby hat, a newborn baby hat, one of those thermal baby hats. The pink and blue, you know, you've seen them if you've had a baby or been in a nursery. 800-225-4008, a message she cannot ignore. 800-225-4008. All right, yesterday, the White House issued a statement of administration policy. This is a procedure in which legislation being advanced, the White House will state whether they are for or against it. And in a multi-page, let's see how many pages it actually is, about a dozen pages, no, 13 pages to be exact, they put out a piece-by-piece analysis of H.R. 2740, the Labor, Health, and Human Services, Education, Defense, State, Foreign Operations, Energy, and Water Development Appropriations Act of 2020. This is a minibus. Several appropriations bills rolled into one, and it systematically begins to dismantle many of the pro-life, pro-family policies that the Trump administration has put in place. In fact, earlier today, as this bill was on the floor, there was debate over one aspect that the administration had advanced, the conscience protection rule. They're trying to strip it out in this bill. Here was Dr. Rowe from Tennessee arguing this earlier today.
Doctors and other health care professionals should not be forced to perform or participate in abortions, assisted suicide, or any other service that would violate their conscience.
Joining me now to talk more about this, Terry Jeffrey, our good friend, editor-in-chief at CNSnews.com. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
This is a, I wouldn't say a subtle, this is a blatant attack on almost every conservative measure that this administration has put forth.
Yeah, and you know, there's a classic technique that they use in Congress all the time here. What this bill is taking, what's normally the labor HHS education bill, and it's marrying it to the Defense Department appropriation bill. And many of the most outrageous things the government does are in HHS. Mm-hmm. And the fundamental function of the federal government is carried out by the Defense Department. It's the most important thing the federal government does, defend our nation against foreign enemies. So they put those together, and then they can use this massive bill to throw all these things in there and try and intimidate even you know, more quote unquote conservative Democrats or who come from more conservative districts, they got to stick with their party on this. And you have Republicans who don't want to be told they're voting against funding the Defense Department. This is a typical thing, Tony, and it goes on all the time. But here we have a Democratic House of Representatives doing it in the most outrageous way, where, yes, they're going to attack the freedom of conscience, and, yes, they're going to attack the right to life.
But this time you have a president who is not afraid of facing controversy. In fact, I think he would be willing to say, no, we're not going down this path. I don't care if you've got the military in this. I'm not going to sign the bill.
It would be a great thing for President Trump to veto this bill. There's absolutely no doubt about it. You know, today I happened to look at the report put out by the Department of Treasury for the funding of the federal government up through May, the first 8 months of this fiscal year. And there's a remarkable thing in there, which is that HHS, which is one of the departments funded by this bill, spends more than $800 billion. And when you add that together with the Social Security Administration, which has spent more than $700 billion this year, HHS and Social Security actually spend a majority of the money of the federal government, 51.9% of the federal government. So what they're doing here, but in the third biggest expenditure by the federal government, is defense. So by putting these HHS and defense together, they're going to be sending to the president a bill that has about two-thirds of all the spending that the federal government does in one bill. I think President Trump should veto it just for that reason.
Well, and he's got a track record here before where they sent him a bad appropriations bill and he signed it and then, you know, said, you know, I'm not doing that anymore. You've got to be fiscally responsible. And you compare, and you got a piece out today talking about the increased deficit. You know, the president's budget actually calls for cuts and elimination of like public broadcasting and funding for that. This inflates spending to even higher levels, which the president calls him out for.
Yes, he should do that. The president should not make the mistake of signing another bill like this. He should put in, it's good for him to put on a document like they did today, spelling out their express reasons for opposing this bill. And, you know, and he should move forward. He should have that fight. It's a good fight for him to have. And when he has that fight, he can educate the country about what the Democrats are doing in this bill, and the people will be on his side.
Of course, in order to really have that fight, I think he's going to have, he certainly has the Republicans in the House, but he's going to need the Republicans in the Senate. Where do you think they are?
Well, it's a you know, last year when they did this same thing with the Republican Congress, they put HHS together with defense, and some very pro-abortion things came down in that bill from a Republican Congress. For example, when the bill first came out of the House of Representatives, it had language in it that expressly forbade the Department of Health, HHS, from funding research that used tissue from aborted babies. Mm-hmm. When the Republican Senate got together, the Republican House, in a conference committee, they pulled that language out. And Paul Ryan went along with it, and that's the bill that they sent to President Trump. President Trump this year should say, no, we're not funding research that uses tissue taken from aborted babies and transplants it into mice. That's one of the things this bill would pay for. The Republican House last year said no, but they caved to Mitch McConnell's Senate. This year, Mitch McConnell ought to grow a spine, and he ought to say, we're not funding that.
Yeah, in fact, the fetal tissue, the policy, the rule put forth just last week is right in the crosshairs of this appropriations bill. Terry Jeffrey, as always, great to have you on the program. Appreciate your insights.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Terry Jeffrey with CNSNews.com, a great source. Many people ask, you know, what are good news sources? CNSNews.com is a good source. Terry has been a journalist for many years. He's one of from the old school, actually reports the news. So they're a good source, CNSNews.com. All right, parents, listen up. You're going to want to hear this next interview. American Medical Association going after parental rights, a direct assault on parental rights. We're going to talk about it next. Don't go away.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive. Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, the Chicago Tribune reporting that members of the American Medical Association in their annual meeting this week in Chicago voted to support state policies, state laws, that would allow minors to override their parents' objections when it comes to vaccinations. Now, moving forward, the AMA will encourage state lawmakers to institute comprehensive vaccine and minor consent policies, according to a news release that the association put out. The policy recommendation, as I mentioned, came Monday during the group's annual meeting in Chicago. Joining me now to talk about this, what I would call assault on parental rights, is Dr. David Stevens, president of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Stevens, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
Now, I'm not going to get into this is not about a debate about vaccinations and whether or not they're good or not, or whether they should parents should vaccinate their children. This is more of a focus on who knows best what's best for their children in terms of making medical choices, because if it's vaccines today, it could be something else tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's a big issue, and we've already seen this same issue with abortion, which is, of course, even a much bigger issue than immunizations, where minors, those probably in their teens, can get an abortion without their parents' permission, and that goes on in many states. You know, we have a very good statement on immunizations in one of our position papers, as well as one on parental rights. And the point is, obviously, parental rights aren't absolute. I mean, if you're abusing a child, neglecting a child, the state has an obligation to step in. But at the same time, we believe there should be moral and religious convictions can say, I don't want immunizations, and say no to it. We strongly recommend immunizations. I want to make that point clear. I do more than most because I worked overseas and took care of kids that died from whooping cough and measles and all the rest of it. And so I encourage people to do it and to get good, accurate information. But at the same time, we don't want to impinge parental rights. And I think where the debate comes down to, Tony, is with, and I think they qualified this, I went and looked at the AMA statement, talking about mature minors. And in many places, those are considered 14 or older. Some places, it's just in some states, it's when they can give informed consent. But still, at that age, depending on the child, it's still the parents should be having the final say.
Well, I agree, and I was going to bring that point out. Mature, I'm kind of curious as to the definition of mature minors, because we don't allow mature minors necessarily to drive. We don't allow mature minors to buy alcohol or cigarettes or to own a gun. So, I mean, there are certain things that it appears that the left wants to carve out. And I think it's a subtle attack on parental rights. Now, I agree. If there's abuse, the state has a right to step in. But in those cases, the state has to prove that there's abuse. By passing laws such as this, it gives blanket approval for children to override the decision of their parents.
Yeah, and I think it's so important that it's qualified because, I mean, the other side of the coin is if a child can give us consent for immunization, can they say they don't want it? How many children want a shot, even those 12, 13, 14 years old? So, you know, if you're going to say it's one way, then you have to say it's the other. If they're, you know, mature enough to decide they want that immunization, then can they say we don't want it and the parent wants them to have it? And most doctors would try to reason that out with and solve the problem and the issue. But this statement just kind of says, well, they have enough power to make this decision without parental input. So 18 states have laws on the books, and the ages vary for mature minors from 14 to 18. Some of them just say capable of giving informed consent. And those are increasing. We have, you know, when we talk about immunizations, let me say this. We say, you know, religious liberty or moral reasons or whatever, except in unusual public health situations. And one that would qualify, I think, for that that's going on right now is what's happened in three or four zip codes in New York City, where over 500 children have come down with measles. And they've come out and said, you know, you're required to get this immunization unless there's some health reason that you can't. In those situations, there's an Ebola outbreak in the United States or things like that in extraordinary situations. And that's not what we're talking about in this statement that the AMA made. But you have to step in and protect the population.
I agree with that. And I actually think that there's biblical principles that support that. The government has a right to protect the entire public, the entire community. And so if someone's going out into the community and there's an outbreak and they're not immunized, then yes, the government has a right there. But as you point out here, this is not the same. This is not a crisis. This is a blanket statement that would undermine the authority of parents to make decisions for their minor children.
Yeah, and there's been an assault on that, Tony, and you know it as well as I, where transgender, they took a child away from its parents saying it was abusing their child because they wouldn't let them have transgender or hormones at age 11 or 12. This is an assault on parental rights, and we need to defend that, and we're in agreement on that as well.
Well, Dr. Stevens, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. Appreciate what the Christian Medical and Dental Association does in advocating for these core values and principles.
God bless.
All right. Thanks so much. Dr. David Stevens, president of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. All right. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch, which includes your phone calls here next. Don't go away.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more. If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org. Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you'd like to join the In Birthday Abortion campaign and helping us send a very visible message to Nancy Pelosi that it's time to vote on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, give us a call right now. You can join the effort. $9 will add another baby hat as we make our way to 90,000 of those that we're going to deliver to Nancy Pelosi. 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008, or you can go to TonyPerkins.com and click on the In Birthday Abortion banner. All right, the phone number to get in on the conversation. Here's what we're talking about today. We're talking about Michael Bogren, the Michigan attorney whose nomination was withdrawn after opposition mounted because of his attack on this Catholic couple, comparing their beliefs about marriage to the Ku Klux Klan. That nomination, well, it goes in the wastebasket. Talking about that, talking about the president, the administration taking a strong stand against the Democrats' massive appropriations bill, and also talking about parental rights and the American Medical Association taking yet another shot at parental rights. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation. Now, let me finish the conversation. At least with myself, that I was having with Dr. Stevens. I agree with him. He says he supports vaccines, especially having worked overseas. Now, I am not a medical doctor, and I'm not going to give you medical advice. What I will tell you is that as a, when I went to the Marine Corps, I got all the vaccines, you know, for all the stuff, places we would be. And just recently, I went back and got had to get some updates because of the international travel I'm doing with the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Now, I do believe that the government has a right to require certain things in order to protect society. Now, I know they can abuse that. I don't think they, number one, should mandate and force parents to get vaccines if the parents have objections to that. That said, I do believe they have a right to keep children out of public places. For instance, I think if you're going to go to a public school, that it's in the purview of that school to require that you have certain vaccinations. I believe that because they have to protect the children. Now, I am strongly opposed to this idea that the American Medical Association says that the states, encouraging the states to give minor children the authority to override their parents when it comes to vaccines. Now, as Dr. Stevens said on the way out of the interview, he mentioned a transgender case which actually was taking place, which took place in Ohio, right outside of Cincinnati, in which a girl wanted to transition to a boy. The parents objected to it. The doctors referred it to a social worker who took it, made its way to the court. The court took the child away from the parents, gave it to the grandparents, but because the grandparents would agree to the transgender treatment. That's where this type of stuff leads to. All right. 866-372-7234. Let's go to John in Ponca City, Oklahoma. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
All right, thanks for taking my call. I was talking about the parental rights without taking the vaccines and everything. It seemed to be funny about the timing that this occurred. We have indeed diseases that seem to be coming up that we had, you know, had under control, and the measles and the outbreaks. And then also then allowing the illegal aliens to come in that hasn't been vaccinated, bringing tuberculosis and other diseases in also. And it seems to be sort of, if you reflect on Hillary's talking about the rights of the child with the UN, where it seemed like the agenda was to take rights away from parents and put them in the hands of the children. It seems to be sort of a picture that seemed to be unfolding here. And what about the pregnant mothers that are exposing? It seems, and we're talking about all the money. It seems like a page out of Saul Alinsky. I can't say, you know,
Saul Alinsky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll just hang up and let you continue on that.
All right, John. Thanks so much for the call. Yeah, I mean that's a whole other story. What's coming across the border and the diseases and stuff that are coming in. And look again. I am not advocating against vaccines. I know there's some people have concerns about vaccines because of how they're made. There's religious objections. I get that. I understand that. And I think parents ultimately have the right. Now, I may not agree with them. I mean, I did not give my children, my wife and I decided not to get our children all the vaccines at one time when they were little. We gave them over time based upon the best medical advice. And that's what I would encourage you to have hopefully you have a good primary physician. I would encourage a Christian physician and work with them and get good medical advice. But the issue here for me, again, I want to separate the vaccine issue from the parental rights issue. So I don't want anyone to take it that I'm against immunizations or suggesting that we shouldn't immunize our children. Now, some people believe that. That's fine. But my point here is that this is yet another step by the American Medical Association, which is hostile to parents, and it's being used. All these big associations are being used by the left to advance their agendas. You know, the HPV vaccine. You know, all of these vaccines, this is where it's coming. This is where they're going with this. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Rich in Baton Rouge. Rich, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Rich here in Greenwell Springs area. About the immunizations and the parental rights and stuff, I mean, I get all that, and I would hate to see the government step in and say, really, even who is to be immunized. When I'm 61, and when I was growing up, some of us would have chicken pox, the mumps, and measles about the same time, if you know what I mean. I mean, I don't know that there's any real, significant risk to a healthy individual getting multiple, even of those at a time. What is the real risk today of an outbreak of any of those? And I say that in respect to this. I even heard a couple of the commentary, like Sandy and maybe Janet, mention that they really don't understand why parents don't get their children immunized. And all I can think of is that they perhaps haven't really read the evidence against immunizations, the increase in autism over the last 30, 40 years, things like that. Can you comment in that area a little bit, Tony, please?
Well, briefly, Rich. Yeah, Rich, thanks so much for the call. I mean, I'm not going to get deep into that because I'm not a medical expert. I did, you know, when I was in the legislature, that was one of the areas that we looked at. I was on the Health and Welfare Committee, and we looked at this correlation to see if there was a correlation between autism and these vaccines. And there's nothing, there's whether it's a direct correlation was not established. There's concerns that it could be, but we didn't come up with anything definitive. I think there's so many environmental factors to be considered here. Again, you know, to your point about the you know, measles and chickenpox, you know, I had those as a kid. Right, I had them, and there's you know, you actually build up some immunities to other things. But there's some dangers there if we have a widespread outbreak of these things. And when you get people together in close proximity, things, you know, people get what other people have. So I completely understand, again, to a degree, not to say that the government doesn't abuse its authority. It can, and that's why we need to watch it and oversee it and explore these things. But, you know, if you're going to live in community with people, there's certain things we all have to agree to, and sometimes we have to give up certain things. And that's why I would say if someone's going to a public school, the school requires immunizations, then I think that's the price of admission. Now, you have a choice. You don't have to put your kid in that school. You can homeschool. You can go to a private school. You can do other things so that you still have a right. You're not being forced to. But again, I want to bring it back to the reason I brought this issue up. And I knew it would be the whole thing with vaccinations are an issue of controversy. And I'm not going to, we may talk about that another time. I want to bring it back to my point. And my point is this attack on parental rights. This is being systematic across many sectors of society, in education, in healthcare, in, you know, entertainment, constantly undermining the authority of the parents. Now, I get it. There are some parents who are irresponsible. All right. I know that. I've seen them. But that doesn't mean you treat every parent as if they don't know what is best for their child. God gave children to parents. And it is the parents' responsibility to take care of that child, and they have the authority to do so. Now, if they don't do it, then the state and others have a right to step in if they're abusive. But a blanket authority to undermine the authority of parents is wrong. It is wrong. And this is a dangerous place to go. This is a part of, you know, we've talked about this before, kind of the left, you know, they're anti-child. They don't want, you know, children are bad. They're consumers of our finite resources. Therefore, they discourage childbearing. So it's, you know, conservatives, Christians. In fact, a few years ago, I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but a few years ago, in a book I wrote, I looked and did some research on the demographics. And at that time, the United States was still at, had a birth rate of a fertility rate of 2.1, which was replacement level. It's now dropped to 1.9, I believe. And the two communities, if you will, that kept America's fertility rate high, many would say Catholics. No, it wasn't the Catholic population. It was actually the Mormon community and homeschoolers. Both put a high priority on children. And you notice people of faith are the ones that, you know, are having kids. They see the value in kids. They see children as God created them to be blessings. They are a blessing from the Lord. That's what the Bible says. And I believe that because I've lived it. I experience it. Five children, they're a blessing. It's thrilling to watch them grow up and serve the Lord. They're blessings. So the left's not having kids. So who's having them? Those on the right. So they have to control. They have to get kids somehow. And they're doing it through the education system. They're doing it through media. And this is a part of it, through the healthcare. This is a part of it. We've talked about this before with Dr. Curtella, another doctor, about how, you know, parents, even in when they take their minors to the doctor, that the doctors are being told to, well, interview the child separate from the parent and talk to them about sex and whether or not they need to be on birth control pills. You know, and of course, doctors are authority figures, so many people don't push back on that. I mean, we push back on it. And parents, you need to know, it's your child. You have the right. You have the responsibility, and you should exercise it. Do not let government or the agents of the government bully you when it comes to your children. There's one thing I'll fight for. Well, there's a number of things I'll fight for, but one of them at the top of the list is my children. I am not going to let the government come between me and my children. And that's what is happening here with these associations that are pushing this left-wing agenda. Folks, parents, you need to be aware, and you need to be equipped, and you need to stand. It's your responsibility. They're your children. All right, I'm sorry. I know we've got calls lined up. We're not going to be able to get to those calls. I apologize. But there is tomorrow, and I'll encourage you to call back again tomorrow because, Lord willing, I'll be back again tomorrow, and I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, no matter what, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.